I'm Josh. I'm the teacher at Dharma Punks, and welcome to those of you who haven't been before. And tonight I'm just going to talk briefly about how to be around difficult people or situations without our normal tendency, which is when we're when we experience discomfort, we tend to either generate a lot of anger or avoid the person or places or things that cause stress. But there are other tools, and basically they're what's known as sati in the Buddhist teachings, or mindfulness. And they help us be around difficult, challenging relationships, people, places, work situations, without having to either add a lot of thinking, a lot of internal drama about why does this person have to be this way, why can't they just see things the way I see or do what I want them to do. Or, on the other hand, our equally unskillful tendency, avoidance, which is once we develop any conflict, to avoid the person. Now, there are times when avoidance is entirely appropriate, when somebody is just so unskillful that they give rise to really unskillful actions in ourselves, and we have very little choice in that situation, where all our spiritual tools have been attempted and then it still doesn't work. There's nothing inappropriate at all. The Buddha said, in fact, once you've completely determined that spiritual practice doesn't work and that you're with someone who's what he called a bella vaga, or a fool, basically. What I, as a teen, we used to call them tools. Once you determine somebody's a tool, there's nothing at all inappropriate with staying away from them. In fact, that's there's a lot of key suttas where the Buddha talked about that. But he sort of used that as a last resort rather than a first resort. And the reason also that we don't want to just practice avoidance is because avoidance psychologically is an extremely unskillful thing to train the mind to do. Avoidance gives birth to phobias and anxiety and all sorts of difficult to unwind and unpackage psychological states. A lot of people who wind up with severe fears, phobias, started out just with very singular, and it grows. The mind is not a very good machine at compartmentalizing avoidance or fear. So once you train yourself to do that, when, you know, my primary mechanism of dealing with stuff I find difficult is just to avoid it, you are training the mind something very dangerous as a technique. So hopefully some of the tools I'll be running over tonight will be helpful. So the Buddha talked about, in his teaching to his son, Rahula, he talked about try to turn the mind into, in your spiritual practice, to wind or like water. And the idea is that wind blows away everything that it touches. It doesn't attach or cling to things or grab onto things. It just allows things to blow through and then pass, like a sky, the clouds blowing through, as I talked about in the meditation. Or a river, things flow through a river and just keep moving. The problem, of course, is that our minds tend to attach to unpleasant situations, unpleasant events, as it also attaches to things that give us short-term pleasure, even though in the long run the pleasures may not be good. For example, smoking crack, I don't know, buying as a way of dealing with feeling a lack of purpose, all kinds of food and gambling and you name it. So the mind tends to both cling to the things it likes and the things it doesn't like, it actually clings to. Oddly, in its attempting to push things away, it actually clings to things. When we're angry or upset about someone, rather than refocusing our awareness, the mind tends to focus heavily on them and think all these thoughts about, oh my God, why is this person such an asshole, or whatever. So that's a form of attachment as well. So the question then becomes, how can we, when there's something causing us stress, a person or an event that's causing us stress, how can we keep it moving through the mind rather than the mind turning into a dammed up river or quicksand where things get stuck? So there's a couple of tools. The first is, in order to turn the mind into wind that blows things through, the Buddha used the analogy of the breath, which is that when we are in attachment, when we are worried or craving or upset or caught up in a spiral of self-centeredness, the breath actually changes. It actually becomes slightly constricted. The pace changes. And the simplest way, when there's fear, when there's worry, when there's obsession, to keep those things moving is to reposition the mind away from the thought or the perception to the breath. And this is not, it sounds at first when you hear it somewhat fanciful, but actually it's one of the most effective tools in working with panic attacks. There's a lot of excellent studies. I actually have a textbook of this thick of where they did studies on mindfulness of the breath and how effective it is, not just in panic attacks, but also with people who have suicidal ideations or obsessive compulsive disorder. The being able to refocus away from the thing that we're obsessing on to the breath, it's a very simple strategy, but it works profoundly. One of the I'll go through the ways that things get stuck in the mind, but one of the ways things get stuck in the mind is by literally affecting the body, which brings us both to the breath and to point number two, which is wherever there's an obsession in the mind, whenever we get caught up on something, there's invariably going to be a part of the body that gets tight and gets tense, becomes stressed. In my case, it's my abdomen. Whenever I'm worried about an event that's happened in the past, whenever I'm upset with someone, my stomach gets very tight, and also my shoulders start creeping up towards my ears. So I've learned to keep part of my awareness now and then going back to those areas. They're surefire tells. And one of the things about the mind is that it's so generally, so externally focused that it's very difficult often to know when we are caught up in anger, caught up in aversion, or caught up in craving. And one of the ways I can tell that is simply by keeping part of my awareness on the parts of my body that invariably start to get triggered. The Buddha says before there are thoughts, before there's any craving, there's always first the physical stress that arises. And this is actually very well documented. Antonio Damasio, the great neuroscientist, wrote a whole book on what we could refer to as body tells, how the body reacts. I also have a book by a neuroscientist called Gut Feelings, where he talks about the physical anchor to every single thought and obsessive state. So it's very important to become aware of your own body. if you ever find your, when you find yourself in a meditation where the mind is very agitated, one of the most skillful things you can do is, rather than fight the agitation, go into the body and just note where you're stressed, where you're tense. And you use that information in the rest of your day-to-day life. This is what mindfulness means. It's not just limited to meditation. It means going through life, we're not so externally completely focused. We also have body and breath awareness. Number three, there was just a wonderful study that came out by neuroscientists at UCLA. They found that the meditation practice of noting or naming moods, emotional states that we're in, just a simple statement, if you notice that there's agitation, and you just say, oh, I'm upset, or oh, I'm angry, or oh, I'm, I want something. Just giving it a little tag is extremely effective in reducing stress. There's a part of the mind called the amygdala, which is, its role is specifically to generate stress and fear. Obviously, when the earth was a much more dangerous place, when the brain was set up many, many, many tens of thousands of years ago, this part of the brain was much more important for our survival. Today, we tend to be much more over-triggered than we need to be. We have far fewer threats to our very existence than we did have 50,000 years ago. But still, the brain is the same brain as we had then. There's been no evolutionary progression, really. So there's still this hyperactive amygdala sending out cortisol and stressing us out needlessly over little remarks as if they were elephants charging at us. So it's very helpful to reduce this triggering by just noting in the mind, oh, anger, fear. By doing that, in essence, you're changing all the thoughts, which are in their own sense, their tags, their naming. Because really what happens with thoughts is there's this physical tension that arises, whether it's tension, anger at someone, or there's craving for something, and then the mind creates all this thought trying to explain what's going on. And rather than fill up the mind with all this thinking, what we do is we simply give it a single word, or two words, or three words. So you're not needing to devote all this mental energy to telling the story about why you're upset. You can see someone who's been pissing you off, or you can have an event in the past that really freaked you out, and you can just say, okay, fear. And when you do that, those memories or that person, it's much easier for it to move through the mind. As we start every meditation, technique number four is metta, which is when you're with someone who's caused you a great deal of agitation, worry, concern. I start out, before I go into any meeting with them, not only checking to make sure that my body is relaxed, but I think thoughts of may they find true peace, may they be free of stress and suffering and fear, may they feel safe and live with ease. These thoughts, I'm not wishing them, if they're being really unskillful, I'm not wishing them monetary rewards. I'm simply wishing that they'd find true peace so that they wouldn't act less skillfully. But these thoughts tend to not take over the mind. They're very peaceful thoughts, and by peaceful I mean they don't multiply into what the Buddha called papancha. They tend to stay very singular. On the other hand, if I go into my normal speech of what they've done in the past and what they're likely to do in the future, not only am I locking myself into defensiveness, but those types of thoughts tend to multiply over and over and over again and fill up the mind and create so much physical stress that I'm much more likely to act unskillfully and create conflict with them or continue conflict. There's also an old saying by Buddhist monks and other people as well, that it takes two to tango. And I found in life that many, many years ago, I thought, why is everybody so fucking unskillful? And the more I practice, the less conflict I have with people. It's not that those people have changed most of the time. It's that I just don't pick up. And so there's very little conflict in my life with really anyone. I suppose if Dick Cheney suddenly appeared in this room, I might have a couple of words with him. But in general, I don't have very many people clogging up my mind. In fact, there's nobody that I'm really trying to avoid these days, or that particularly displeased with. Because even if I am, I just let it go through the mind. I feel the feelings, which is important. This is not about repressing feelings. It's very much about feeling the feelings, but it's not about keeping the story going over and over and over again in the head. So, feel the feelings, name what's happening, allow the thoughts to move through. If you go through a really difficult event in life, feel the feelings, name the thoughts, breathe, allow them through. Another two quick skills, and then I'll be done. The Buddha and the Sabbasava Sutta talked about avoiding atamayata, which is the mind collapsing around a thought or a memory. He said, keep the mind big by learning to refocus the mind on other sense forces, which simply means when you're around somebody who pisses you off or takes up a lot of your attention, you can either focus somewhere else, of course, but another way is to not become so exclusively visual, which means we can settle some of the awareness into the hearing or into the body or into any other sense port, so that we're not overbalanced on just staring at this one person. The Buddha even mentioned in that sutta about if there's somebody really pisses you off, just look somewhere off, look somewhere else. When I'm in meetings with somebody who I find really unskillful, that's a little bit difficult to do, but I do practice hearing, listening, feeling the body, repositioning the mind so that it's not so hyper-fixated on people. And that's one of the sad tendencies of the mind, is that we tend to hyper-fixate on people or events, memories that have caused us stress, rather than democratically allowing the mind to look around and focus on other things. Finally, my teacher Ajahn Jeff talks about being an anthropologist, which is sort of fun. It means when you're around people that are stressed out, when you're around people who are acting unskillfully, don't join them. Instead, be an anthropologist, like you're scouting out a rare tribe that has been just discovered, the stressed out people of the Amazon, the stressed out people of New York. And you have been, you're an anthropologist from Mars, as he says, that has been dropped in there. And you're observing the weird, wacky habits of the human race. Now, how do you do that? The quickest way I've found is to not interact, which is to not join in, to pull back and just observe as much as possible. The more I'm pulled in, the more I feel like I have to get in there, I have to defend myself, I have to interact, I have to engage, the less I can observe from a distance. The more I give myself permission not to be pulled in, not to have to be always situations where I feel like something unfair is going on, but just to notice first and see what's happening, I actually give myself choices. I'm not just roped into reacting. I'm actually giving myself the possibility that I might not need to do the most reactive thing that pops into my mind. So those are some of the tools of letting things flow through the mind rather than the mind clamping onto unpleasant. There are many more, but I try to limit my talks on Thursday so that there's time for you guys to share. So I thank you for listening to that, and now it's your turn to share about anything that's going on, and doesn't have to be on the subject from tonight's talk, but if something I brought up is of interest, feel free to comment on it.
Thanks. I'm Chrissy.